Please be seated. I find it somewhat ironic that we get such hard sayings from Jesus on Labor Day weekend. Now, the fact is that in this episode we've just heard read from Luke, Jesus is addressing a very large crowd. He's quite popular in those days, but they're a large crowd of seekers. They're not committed disciples. And they're not at all familiar with what he is about. He's warning them that discipleship is hard. He's telling them that sticking with him in tough times is going to be hard. He's telling them that following him, discipleship, is more than expecting life to go well for you and then being thankful to God when it does go well. Now back to Labor Day. Here we are gathered, the last weekend of summer. It's a vacation time, and this congregation here assembled on Labor Day weekend, well, especially the last one of the summer, the last holiday of the summer. These are seasoned church people. In my experience, you get truly committed church people on weekends like this, or on football weekends, or on the 4th of July, seasoned church people who really don't need a whole lot of reminding about what it means to stick with Christ, to stick with the body of Christ, his church, through thick and thin. This crowd, a Labor Day crowd, I feel already knows that Christian discipleship is not an invitation to an easy or successful life. We know something about that. The invitation that Jesus extends, we know all too well, is one that clearly comprehends pain, anticipates it, and cost, and trial, and travail. But it also points to a beauty that dwarfs all of the trial of this transitory life, and it alters our understanding about what our lives are all for. So I know that I'm preaching to the faithful this weekend. I think it's ironic that you're the ones to hear these hard sayings today. I'm preaching to those whose life and breath are in the very bricks and mortar of this place. But it's good to remind all of us that none of our faith is perfect. Nobody's faith is perfect. Some theologians say that our human inability for perfect faith is the essence of original sin. Our faith has limits. We are human beings. None of us has perfect faith. None of us ever reaches perfection in our trust in God or our patience with God, even as God is infinitely patient with us and with his church. Jesus tells the crowd something that rings very true today. He tells them that they need to sit down. You have to sit down and estimate the cost of following him. You have to sit down and estimate cost. Cost. That's the word. It's easily grasped in every generation. You know, long before I was ordained, I was an active layman in the church, just as all of you are here today, and I served on vestries one after the other. I should have known better, if you know what I'm saying, but now that I am ordained and serving on different vestries, I know that one of the most typical questions asked in vestry meetings is, what's this going to cost? How much is this going to cost? Cost is something that has a lot of practical theological application in the church in our generation, and it surely did for the people of Jesus' times. And he sets this famous example in terms of construction costs. And we all get that. We're Texans, we build things. As long as I've been alive, Interstate 35 has been under construction, and I imagine that I will leave this life without it being finished. Jesus tells the crowd, he tells us, don't lay the foundation, don't pour the concrete unless you have enough means, enough available to build the structure. He says to figure out beforehand what you're getting into. So it's not an invitation to comfort when things don't go well. It's an invitation, he says, to take up a cross, to take up our cross individually and collectively. And that is something that is a lifelong process. For my part, I am constantly amazed at the people, the lives that I've encountered in my church life over the years, starting very young. People, examples that I can point to who have made a strong impression on me of the sort of self-giving sacrifice that Jesus speaks of today, the kind of cost that he describes for us. I get to see this sort of demonstration. Those aware of, who understand the cost of discipleship, who estimate the cost before they pour a foundation. I see that all the time in the churches I have gone to, that I have participated in, and now the churches that I serve as a priest. And it's been a source, not only a great humbling source for me, but also quite a challenge, a consolation as well as a challenge that is offered up to me as I see this sort of sacrificial giving on the part of so many that I've encountered in the church. I was thinking this week, just over the years, and one example, for some reason, it has stuck with me, came up when I was in school at the University of Texas. I went to St. David's downtown where I'd worshiped. I caught a lot of flack from some of my fraternity brothers about going to church on Sunday morning, so I would leave a blazer and a tie in my car on Saturday night and then leave the fraternity house, drive around the corner, put my tie on, and go to St. David's. And I always happened to be seated next to a lady, I think in her 80s in those days. I was 20 years old or so, and she was always so loving and welcoming to me. Didn't say much, but she was just sort of one of those people you wanted to gravitate to, you wanted to be with. And one day I heard that she was having some surgery, and I can't remember what it was about. I think it was cataract surgery, and this is 1971 we're talking about, okay? So that was kind of novel surgery at the time, and I told her, it must have seemed strange coming from such a young face, that I would pray for her. And she told me something that I will never forget. It has stuck with me after all of these years. She took my hand, she said, "Oh, when you pray, always pray for the eternal. Always pray for the eternal." It struck me at that stage of my life where I was filled with goals that I just knew were going to make me happy, things that I just had to achieve to have a deeper sense of myself, to be taught that human life was very transitory. Life was short. We always should be praying for the eternal. I've thought about her over the years as someone who really understood estimating the cost, who understood what it meant to follow, understood what it meant to have your blueprints in order and your construction timeline all figured out. Christ's body in the church, and that is one of the great gifts for us, our sharing of our faith. It gives us ample opportunity to learn from the examples and from the witness and faith of other people, even when our own faith is weak, even when our own vision is dark or obstructive. The past few years, Deborah and I have joined with Bishop Doyle and a small group of others in the diocese who have attempted to help and support the mission and work of our new Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby. I don't know if you've read much about him. He's an outstanding guy. He's been Archbishop for 3 years now. You know, he was a former finance guy for British Petroleum. So all the Texans really relate to him. He's a corporate type. Very common sense, a lot of practical theology about him, very humble and very caring. He's worked tirelessly to hold the Anglican Communion together at a difficult time. I really don't know that there's ever been anything other than a difficult time for the church, for the communion, but to hold these 38 national churches in diverse cultures flung worldwide, to keep them at table together, to keep us all in conversation. He doesn't do it, Archbishop Welby doesn't do it in a showy way. He doesn't do it with important pronouncements. He doesn't articulate great encyclicals. He does it the old-fashioned way, the Jesus way. He gets on airplanes and flies to places to speak with people, to sit down and reason with people. The British ambassador in Sudan got all over him last year because he went to the sea and to minister to the church in South Sudan, and the crown said they couldn't possibly protect him, and I think that was the least of his concerns. He was on the road in those places building community. He is somebody who finds common ground even when there are so many voices and so many impulses to division. He pulls people back, and he's offered himself, his work, in a very costly way. He has paid a price for the sort of mission and relationship that is binding us as a Catholic faith. It's costly. It's hard work, and he has paid the price. And in the midst of those who are either set in their ways or who insist on their ways, he offers a different path forward. He offers a path of love and reconciliation and, frankly, an awful lot of common sense. This morning when I got up, I hadn't thought about speaking of this, but I got quite a thrill. I went on the news sources early this morning and saw the celebration in Rome for Mother Teresa. They were, of course, Rome is 8 hours ahead of us, and so this was all going on at the time that I was waking up and getting ready to drive up here. And I thought it was very powerful as I think of the life of this woman who we now will call, well, will be known to the world as Saint Teresa. You know, we know so much about her life and her work. Everybody knows this very dutiful, giving woman who went into the slums and helped those who were so easily shunned by the rest of society. We know about her work during her life, but it was only after her death, when her diaries were published, that we learned what a struggle she had had in her faith, a struggle that each of us can identify with. She often wrote of the deafening silence that came to her after she struggled and reached out to God. She took up a cross, and she paid a price. And all of the great histories of the church revolve around the saints of this order. What a spectacular, inspiring life for someone whose motto was, "I am unworthy." I am unworthy, this great saint, this great witness, this great disciple, this great follower of Jesus Christ. Well, even on Labor Day, even for the assembled group of the faithful, it's a good weekend to think in our own way of the times that we have seen self-giving, self-sacrifice, and it has lifted our spirits and shown us the worth of the price that we're called to pay, even when our own faith may fail, when our own faith fails to be perfect. It's a good weekend for this Labor Day crowd, all of us, to proclaim those moments when we see Christ transforming our lives, when he has helped us shoulder that cross, when he has helped us pay that price, and that is our life and faith that we can show to the world. In the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.